KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. One of Hollywood's more outspoken citizens, Blumhouse founder Jason Blum, joins us once again to share his take on the ongoing strikes. He has thoughts on what's wrong and what needs to change, including the approach to compensation that's been adopted in the streaming era.
I don't think it's a Netflix problem. It's a streaming model problem. The idea of buying out talent up front, no matter how the thing they make performs, is a goofy way to make shows and movies, for sure. That is not just Netflix. That's all streamers.
Blum talks about the streamers' reluctance to share data with creatives, how he thinks the model should change, and why he thinks the distribution of wealth, including quite a lot of it that goes to him, is unfair. But first we banter. Stick around. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So everybody is watching with bated breath with these two ongoing strikes that are so destructive and not good for anybody. And there was a moment, you know, maybe a few days ago, where it seemed that maybe there was some progress because I guess the AMPTP came out with a suggestion and the WGA didn't immediately say, it's trash, you're the worst people in the world. So people were like, hey, maybe there's movement. And then it just seemed to kind of go away.
Yeah, I mean, they're still talking, so it's not like all hope is lost. But this is one of those where, unless you're in the room, it's so hard to read into this. And now we're in the situation where we're heading into the fall season and things that normally happen in the fall are going to look very different. First and foremost is this fall film festival season,
right,
which kicks off with the Venice Film Festival and then the Telluride Film Festival and the Toronto Film Festival. And SAG did some interesting stuff this past week. They clarified that any studio or streamer that buys a movie at this festival, meaning, you know, a pickup for distribution, is going to have to sign on to the interim agreement that basically agrees to all of the guild demands. This is on the SAG-AFTRA side. So we're going to see this pressure play out in a number of ways. First of all, obviously, the movies that are being released by struck companies will not have talent appearing at these film festivals. That's what caused MGM to pull the Zendaya movie from Venice. Bradley Cooper, even though he's the director of Maestro for Netflix, he's also an actor in it, and he's chosen not to go to Venice to support that film. And we're going to see Toronto especially have a lot fewer stars.
Yeah, we should note, Matt, that that's a big deal, right? Nobody, I think, really wants to release a big movie or a medium big movie with no stars to do press. That makes marketing it very difficult.
Yeah, especially for these smaller movies that need attention, and you get attention through your stars. So, you know, the filmmaker can only do so much. So that's one way we're going to see it at these festivals. The second way is in the market. The fact that this is where you go to sell a movie, and if the streamers and studios have to sign an interim agreement, perhaps they will be less likely to buy your movie at these festivals. Now, it's a little complicated because obviously when there is a deal with SAG-AFTRA, that will supersede whatever the interim agreement is. So even if these studios loathe to sign an agreement now that requires them to provide 2% of their revenue and transparency to the actors, ultimately, whatever is decided, even if it's not that, will govern, but it still might make them skittish to sign on to a movie now when they have said that they will not sign these agreements.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff is very complicated and messy, but I have to feel, I mean, maybe I'm naive, but I have to feel like the studios, despite their quarterly, you know, we're saving money thing that they say, this is not good for the business. We've talked about this before. You know, we're at a fraught moment where people are just coming back to the movies. These guys pretend that they can tread water, especially like Netflix kind of does, but I'm not sure how long they can tread water. And I think you probably agree.
Yeah, I mean, the other big thing this fall season is the television season is not happening. And that's when the advertisers expect to see new programs and the late night shows and all the other things that generate what is still a very big business. And yes, it's not exactly happening, or at least not on the same level with reruns instead of fresh new shows. And the question is, as the strike drags into September, we're looking at, you know, downtime of a couple weeks for this to get ratified, and then shows have got to start up again and the actors need to come in. So at this point, like, it's the end of the year before these shows can get on the air at the soonest.
Yeah, and we've heard so much talk about how these broadcast or cable things are in free fall, but they still generate billions of dollars, and that's money, and the studios are all hungry for that money.
Yeah, we'll see how things like reality and, you know, putting Yellowstone on CBS, like if those generate the same numbers, because this is a numbers business. If you cannot generate ratings, then the ad numbers are going to go down, and that's, we're seeing that already in some of the projections that were on the earnings calls this past week or two, where because of the strike, it's exacerbating an already down market for advertising. And that could come home to roost in these quarterly reports.
I think that what we're dealing with, and it's obviously more than clear, is not just complicated issues, but both sides feeling existentially threatened. And that is going to make it very hard, and has made it very hard. It's not just about give me a raise. You know, it's about this transformative idea of, you know, transparency. And supposedly the AMPTP has offered some transparency proposal to say, we'll tell you more about how your show did or didn't do, but they didn't attach it to compensation. You know, that's great, but it doesn't get at what the unions are concerned about.
No, and, you know, there's another factor here is as this drags on, we're over 100 days now for the writers, there is an expectation in the membership that they want something out of this. Each segment of the membership feels that they have now sacrificed so significantly that they need this negotiating committee to deliver for them. And that's why when we've seen this information dribble out of, oh, there's a transparency give here, there's a give on the writer's room, you see chatter amongst the writers like, well, what about late night? What about all these other categories that we've been striking for 100 days over? So that puts additional pressure on this negotiating committee to deliver, which ultimately puts pressure on the talks and exacerbates the strike.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what we're getting is kind of like they're willing to do something, something, something on these issues that are very key, but not enough to say that's transformative. That means we've struck for a reason and we have the victory. So yeah, Matt, I have a feeling we might be talking about this for a long while, but I hope I'm wrong. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, founding partner of Puck News. As the founder and CEO of Blumhouse, Jason Blum has been a prolific producer, selling shows and movies on various platforms, often with great success. He joins me to talk about the latest on the work stoppages and current industry woes. We always like to talk to you because you're outspoken and you say what you think. But this particular go-round, we're still in strike mode. We do not know whether there's true progress between the AMPTP and the Writers Guild as we are talking now. Obviously, people are hopeful. But the tweet that got my attention was, anyone working in Hollywood who is saying the strike is not impacting them is full of baloney. That seemed to be a posture of certain people in Hollywood.
You know, I'll answer your question in a different way. If I am interested in a house and I love the house and I want to buy the house and the house costs $9 and I don't want to pay $9, I want to pay $8 or $7 for the house. In my experience, the way to get the house is not to tell the owner his house is disgusting and gross and doesn't look good, but to tell the owner how beautiful his home is and how important it could be in my future. I think both sides are guilty of this. But I kind of lay more of the blame at the foot of the AMPTP, I think. When you're negotiating with another party, the way to get what you want is not to insult them. The idea that if the studios aren't making shows or movies, they have a better quarter because they have less costs is a totally ridiculous thing to say on both sides. It's ridiculous for the studios to say, like, well, we're not affected. It doesn't affect us. And I don't think most of them were, is my point, because I think their words are taken out of context. Like what they're saying is our quarter is actually going to be better, but they're certainly not saying our studios are better off. And so that was annoying me that particular morning when I made that X.
He said X. Okay. For a minute there, I was like, he made an X. but yes. Do you, Elon? What can I say? I'd like to set this in this recent history context. And when I say recent, I'm not talking about a year or two. This thing that you talked about, the managing for the quarter, it goes beyond issues that have to do with, you know, the strike and saying, look at the money we saved. This has been going on for a while in Hollywood. What I'm seeing, and I don't know whether you feel the same way, but I think probably is, you know, you have these Wall Street analysts looking at every quarter and the companies playing to those quarters. And the Wall Street analysts have this power to say, well, you got to get all in on streaming. Show us your subscriber numbers. And then literally a few months later saying, where's the profit? Where's the profit? And I think this has been toxic for Hollywood, to me, having covered this for a while, in a recent decade or so. I don't know. What do you think?
You mean that the content creators are public companies and subject to quarterly performance? Is that what you mean?
Well, they become, in many cases, part of some bigger thing, and they're public, and everything is supposed to be consistent with SEC disclosures. But also, let's not forget that a lot of these executives, they get bonuses, right, based on the short-term return. I remember the late Brad Gray talking to me about Paramount results, and the whole frame was how much he and his boss, Philippe Domon, were going to get rewarded for the most recent quarter. So,
well, that didn't work out so well.
Well, ultimately, he was fired, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that's bad. But I do think there are very different kinds of leaders in Hollywood. And I think most of the people at the helm of these companies are not leading by quarter. They have, unfortunately, the way public companies work is they have to make quarterly reports. And during those quarterly reports, they really have to talk about the last 3 months and the next 3 months. I have lots of issues with the AMPTP, and I have lots of issues, as you know, my big die in the sword issue is lower the cost of content and share. But I really think the earnings reports are and oftentimes misunderstood. They're supposed to be talking about the next 3 months. That doesn't mean that most of them are thinking about that. And I actually really don't think they are. I think most CEOs are not like Brad Gray and Philippe were looking at the future in three-month increments. I really don't think most of them are guilty of that.
Well, that's encouraging, but they are susceptible to that pressure from the analysts, right? That lash them or no?
It depends on the financial condition, the overall financial condition of the company. Some are certainly more susceptible to it than others. I definitely don't think Amazon is too susceptible to court. You know, Jeff Bezos has famously said, he isn't and hasn't been. Not that he's running the day to day at that company anymore. But I think it really depends on the company.
You recently were on Billy Ray's podcast, and Craig Mazin was also on the podcast, and he had this little speech about his view of Netflix and the others, you know, the pure streamers, the streamers where the entertainment business is a side hustle. But as I recall, it was specifically talking about Netflix. I think he said he didn't want to use the word Ponzi scheme, but very much implied that it was, that he doesn't believe that Netflix can keep going and going and going. And I think you kind of endorsed that view, if I understood you, did I?
You are correct. I said I agreed with him, but I thought about that afterwards. There were certain things that I agreed with. I don't think it's a Netflix problem. It's a streaming model problem. The idea of buying out talent upfront, no matter how the thing they make performs, is a goofy way to make shows and movies, for sure. That is not just Netflix. That's all streamers. The thing he said about a Ponzi scheme, I didn't say this on the podcast. I should have. I totally disagree with that. They spent and lost money for many, many years gaining subscribers. They are now an extraordinarily profitable company. I don't think Netflix is going anywhere. They're the most profitable streaming company. All that spending, which we all, including myself, thought was nuts, has paid off for them. So in that sense, I don't agree with what he was saying.
I think he sees the runway as finite around the world, just as it was here when they hit the bump. But obviously you don't agree. But I think there was also a conversation where one of you said that there are people in the bargaining room like Amazon, Apple, Netflix, where they don't have the same interest aligned with the legacy studios. And there was a question, you know, people have talked about this for a while because early rumors, and I have no idea, I'm not saying these are true, I'm just saying that there were rumors that Ted Sarandos was the problem, and then why is he even in there with the AMPTP? He may be turning around and becoming a negotiator at this point based on some reports. But do you feel that these things like Apple and Amazon and Netflix, which has no other business besides streaming, can they be in the same family with the studios that had legacy studios and trying to figure out a model that works for them?
Yeah, I did make that point, although many people before me have made that point too, that it's the first time in 100 years that the AMPTP is not made up of companies that primarily make their money from TV shows and movies. You know, in this case, Netflix is not that. Netflix does make their money from TV shows and movies, but Apple and Amazon, who have become two of the most important financiers of shows and movies, we are a rounding error for those companies. That's not good or bad. It just makes their point of view very, very different than the other companies they're at the table with. I don't have anything to do with the negotiations. I don't know what's happening with the negotiations, but it's certainly my point of view that these strikes wouldn't have happened or would have been resolved sooner if the AMPTP was made up of companies just making money from making shows and movies, which they're not anymore. Nothing to really do about that. It was just an observation.
Coming up after the break, Jason Blum acknowledges his privileged place in what he calls the fragile ecosystem of Hollywood and says he agrees that the distribution of wealth isn't fair. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes. Join Jacqueline Coley as she hosts a brand new podcast, Scene on the Screen. Meet the innovative people at NBC Universal as they share their journeys, inspirations, and the movies that define them. Each episode is an intimate and fun conversation about the impact of film. Scene on the Screen is available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. I'm talking to Blumhouse founder Jason Blum about the big issues of this fraught time in Hollywood. You have talked a lot about transparency, which the streamers, once again, have been very resistant to. Some people say they don't want to give up the numbers because it will show how badly certain things are doing. And other people say they don't want to give out the numbers because if they're good, they don't want to pay more in success. What is your take on that?
Here is my take on transparency in the last 5 days, which are a couple of new thoughts I've been having about it. There's a lot of both sides talking out of two sides of their mouth, which I find frustrating. But I'm going to start with the AMPTP and particularly the streamers. We keep hearing this story, fable, myth, fallacy, which is so crazy to me that, you know, it wouldn't really help to share the data with the artists because, you know, the failing shows, I don't believe that. And I don't buy into that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Shows and movies have failed since the beginning of time. So I don't buy that. Wall Street doesn't care about ratings. They care about who's making money. So if your shows are failing and you're making money, they're not going to care. So I don't buy that. But here's what drives me crazy when the streamers, they say this, they say, listen, we don't want to share information from you because unlike in the past, we are in a different business now. We're in the subscriber acquisition and retention business. So even though someone may have watched a show for a billion hours, we don't know if that directly translates to subscriber acquisition or subscriber retention. Now, I will tell you that if someone, you've made a TV show and it's on a streamer, and someone's watched it for 2 minutes, It's not helping with retention and it's not helping with acquisition. And if someone's watched it for 2 billion minutes, it's definitely helping with one or the other, and both are important. So this idea that sharing is impossible because of the new model is completely nuts to me. And what it should be, it's for every 100 hours or 1,000 hours, I don't know what the math would be, you get a penny. And I promise you, over time, it'll work out. Because if your show's being watched a lot, the platform it's on is doing better. And if it's not being watched, it isn't. So that's one thing that I've been hearing a lot lately that I think it's disingenuous. The other thing, now, when the artists, and this doesn't go for all of them by any means, but there is a little bit of like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, guys. So the people who are taking pictures of residual checks where they made 4 cents, well, now I'm not saying this of all people, but a lot of those people agreed to a back-end buyout. So I think it doesn't help our case. I say to my fellow artists out there, it doesn't help our case to say you're not getting back-end when your show, my show was watched by a gazillion people over and I never got a penny. Well, you signed a deal with the devil, which I think is a terrible thing to sign. But if you sign the deal with the devil, which we have done, you know, we have done before.
I'm aware.
Then at that moment, you must agree that you're making a deal. You've decided to get paid up front. And then you ship off your show or your movie. And then you have to live with the consequences. The equivalent would be, you know, if the streamers were publishing how many people had seen the shows that didn't work, right, which is very few, and how much they had paid for those shows. So I just think we would have a better case. I'll go back to where I started, which is if we embrace the people on the other side and talk more rationally about it. And I just think there's a lot of like irrational, emotional talk about this stuff on both sides. And we would get further if we were a little more rational and a little less, I guess, finger pointy about it.
I mean, the thing you said is ideally true. But if you were dreaming of making this show and Netflix or somebody like Netflix comes along and says, here is the deal that we offer. You can't say, no, I'd really prefer the other model and see how it does on your streaming service, right? And I'm wondering about, you have that Exorcist thing, is that underway at Universal?
Yeah, you wonder where I didn't follow my own mantra. We have a lot more examples than that. Look, almost every TV show we make, now we don't have a choice, like you said, because in television, you really basically don't have a choice anymore. In movies, you still do have a choice. You can go somewhere that does share. You can go to Universal or Paramount or Sony or all the traditional theatrical distributors, Warner Brothers, with a movie, take less upfront and bet on what you make, or you go to a streamer and take the money upfront and, you know, that's it. When you're making a movie, you really do have the choice, assuming more than just one person wants to finance what you're making, right?
Exactly.
Which is the biggest
thing. Yeah, if it's your last hope.
In television, you really simply, unfortunately, just don't have that choice anymore, because almost across the board now, everyone in TV has adopted the streaming model. They would all rather pay a little bit more for the show than pay less, save some money, and give the artists a share of what the show does if the show's successful. Although I think we're seeing that shift. I think one of the benefits of Wall Street pushing on everyone being profitable is that also means there's a lot of pressure to lower costs. And the most effective way to lower costs of shows and movies is to pay the creators, the writers, the directors, the actors, the producers less upfront and pay them more in success. Because, you know, another reason why I think it's a good business system too is that, you know, unfortunately for all of history, less things are successful than not successful.
Yes.
So that you don't, you know, you wind up only paying out one of four, one of three times.
If that, yeah.
If that, exactly.
I always think it's funny the way people talk about, you know, we'll just make the ones that are going to be good.
Yeah.
Like, what a great idea.
Spectacular business strategy of the new production companies. We're going to make the good ones. The other thing that I think is important to, that I hope the pressure on profitability will force the distributors and platforms to monetize their content in the most efficient way possible. And again, this I've said before too, but the way we now know the way to do that is to let it migrate from service to service to service. That's going to get the most eyeballs on the piece of content, and that's going to get the most money to the producers of that content. And ultimately, if there's a sharing deal, that money will trickle down to the people who are responsible for making it.
Yeah, I have to say I'm a bit mystified by this thing of let's put it on Netflix or whatever and let it sit there forever. Or, you know, it just makes sense, right? The windows, I mean, that's what Hollywood is trying to do now, is to reinforce whatever windows have survived this moment in history.
Well, I don't think it's sustainable long term that anyone is going to make something and let it sit exclusively on their service until the end of time. I don't think that will be with us forever. I think that it had a lot to do with like the intense battle for subscribers, which now has matured in such a way that, again, the pressure on profitability is going to force the platforms to let the shows and movies that they make migrate. I feel very confident that that will happen.
One of the issues that you've addressed is the chasm between what someone like Bob Iger or David Zaslav makes and what they're paying. And that has been, you know, not great optics. I mean, sometimes the numbers are not really the numbers. They'll say they got a package worth this much, but they have to hit certain goals and, you know, and get paid this way and or that. But you've taken issue with your own salary. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, no, I said I really don't think it's fair to single out CEO pay. I think it's fair to single out. I think what's happening in the entertainment business is no different than what's happening in the rest of America. And in fact, in the West generally, is that the 0.1% is overpaid at the expense of the middle and the bottom. But I think if you take the top 10 salaries of the top 10 actors, the top 10 showrunners, the top 10 producers, and the top 10 executives, you'll find they're all pretty similar. In fact, there's an argument to be made the executives would have less than those other categories. And I think, by the way, and I think that's wrong. And I include myself in that. And I think that the distribution of wealth in the entertainment business is not fair. It just isn't fair. But it's not the CEOs versus the artists. It's the top versus the middle and the bottom of all those categories, which is more of, again, of where I started, which is I love this business. I've been doing it a long time. And people have, you know, different jobs in the business. Some people are writers and some people are actors and some are producers and some are executives. But it's an ecosystem and it's a relatively fragile ecosystem. And we all kind of have to work together. And it breaks my heart when we get really personal and mean with each other. I feel like let's save that for Donald Trump and kind of stick together a little bit more. That was where that thought kind of came from.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when I think if you're going to demand big concessions, the first offer is not really what you think you're going to get. And then sometimes I'm like, this language has gotten too agitated for anybody to be able to kiss and make up. You know, I mean, we will have to have the industry come together and move forward, right? And do you worry like that the bitterness is deep? I'm just noting like the writers fired their agents to do away with packaging. That bitterness lingers. You know, I hear it from the agents.
Yeah, you know, I do worry about that. When Craig said that on Billy's podcast, it stupidly hadn't occurred to me. And I really do worry about that. I worry like the idea that you have a group of artists saying like, I'm not sure agents should be in the middle of this. Like that was, you know, agents, first of all, almost every agent I know is in the business because they love storytelling, almost every single one. And second of all, they really, sometimes it's annoying, you know, and it can be annoying to me, but they advocate on behalf of the artists. By the way, I know that there are agents in the middle of it, but if anyone is qualified to negotiate between artists and financiers, it's agents. So yeah, it did make me sad. And I do, you know, I disagree with agents all the time and I disagree with studios and streamers all the time, but that doesn't mean like I have this personal animosity towards them. I have plenty of personal animosity, but I save that for other groups.
Well, okay. I'm going to wrap up by saying that I'm sure we both hope for a speedy and fair resolution with these strikes, which is the diplomatic way of speaking about them that a certain CEO probably should have done in the first place. Are you hopeful for the near future?
I'm very hopeful. This is the last time I'm going to do a podcast about a strike for hopefully a long, long time.
Yeah, that would be good for everybody if we get there. Jason Blum is the founder of Blumhouse. Thank you for talking to me today.
Thank you.
And that's the business. Joshua Farnham produced and edited today's program with help this week from John Meek, who mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW shows on kcrw.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on the Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.